Migration Media. This is Migratory Patterns. I'm your host, Mike Shaw. Let's be frank, migration is screwing with identity. We humans are a tribal species. We love to categorize and separate ourselves from one another. We're so good at it, or we're so bad at it, that you can be born in a place, have been raised in a place, but not ever feel like you're from that place. What does that say about us? I've just started this podcast journey, so I don't think I'm ready to answer that question yet. But conversations like this week's with my guest Carrie Lean are starting to make me, I don't know, think kind of badly about us. As she'll explain, she was born in France to two people who weren't French, grew up in that country, went to school in that country, and even to this day doesn't call herself French. And she doesn't even think most French people would call her French. On the other hand, her journey from France over to Asia and her future plans, they actually make me feel pretty hopeful for us. So maybe it's just a wash, and I'll just have to keep doing this podcast and keep trying to figure it out. Carrie's journey is a really interesting one. And what's so exciting about it is that as unique as she is, it's really not that remarkable. It's happening to more and more people. So her story is also fairly instructive. This is going to be more typical as we move forward. I certainly learned a lot from her. So sit back and enjoy my conversation with Carrie Lean. Carrie Lean?
Yeah.
Welcome to Migratory Patterns.
Thank you.
So where is home?
That's a good question, Mike. There is no answer to this question.
That's probably the most philosophical reply I've had yet.
Yeah, well, home is where the heart is, I guess.
Oh, there you go.
No, I think, you know, talking about home, it just changes depending on where you're at in life, really.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how do you respond if someone just out in life says, where are you from?
It depends on the context and who I'm speaking to, strangely enough.
This is great. You're like evading me like a political candidate. I love it.
I've actually realized that I do give a different answer depending on who I'm talking to.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm talking, because I was born and raised in France, but both my parents aren't French and I have no French blood in me. I just happen to be born there and raised there. I guess my initial answer would be France. But if I'm, say, speaking to a French person, if a French person asks me, then I may answer, oh, I'm half British, half Chinese. But if, say, you as an American ask me where I'm from, I would say, oh, I'm from France.
Yeah.
And why I would do this, maybe it's because I don't want to fit in somehow. I give a different answer.
I'm not part of whatever preconceived category you put me into. Here's how I'm different.
Yeah. No, but sometimes, though, like if I am speaking to a French person, then I would say which town I'm from, which is Strasbourg.
Strasbourg. Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, Strasbourg. I think I told you this last time we chatted. I have a really good friend I met my first year in Beijing. And her grandfather had moved to France from Vietnam in like the 50s or 60s, during the whole conflict there.
Yeah. And like my dad, actually. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, her grandfather moved, and she was from Brittany, and her mom, mm-hmm. you know, was, French, but you know, was half Vietnamese,
mm-hmm.
and so she's a quarter Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. And she said to me one day, she said, "You know, I'm talking to people, and they don't know I'm not French." I'm thinking, you're a third generation born in France. Like what, like that notion that I'm like, they don't know I'm not French, even though you've been there, a second generation born there. It just really didn't compute to me. And then I realized, oh my God, Europeans think about this differently than Americans do.
Mm.
And that was a really eye-opening kind of conversation to me. Mm. And it made me understand that as complex as we can be in America about identity, other countries and cultures, even more complex. Like in America, I'm not bragging because we have our own problems, but in America, if you can ask someone, oh, what are you? And mm-hmm. I'll say, well, I'm Irish. Someone else will say, oh, I'm Portuguese.
Yeah.
You know, what are you is kind of like a subtext for where are your ancestors from?
Right.
You know, it's not, the assumption isn't that you're not American. The assumption is everyone's from somewhere else. Where are your people from?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, because the States was founded on this diversity, right?
Yeah.
You are a migratory people.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's just so embedded and it's normal and it's natural.
Yeah. Yeah. I love your kind of different context gets different answers. What's the most common answer you feel like you give?
Lately, being in China would probably be France.
You say French.
Yeah. I say French.
Yeah. You moved around a lot though, haven't you?
Yes, so I lived in France, so did my whole education in France, and then I moved to China. I can't even remember what Asia was, but it was after my higher education.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually been in Asia ever since. And I've moved around a lot in Asia, I guess, but I've always stayed close to Asia.
Mm-hmm.
So first Beijing, like many people who come to Beijing want to learn the language. And then Hong Kong, and then came back to Beijing, then moved back to Hong Kong. That was all in context of work, so I had the opportunity to travel, which is great. And then Chengdu, that I loved, amazing city in China, super laid back, like the Mediterranean without the Mediterranean.
Oh, I've been there.
Culture,
been there
subculture
once,
of China.
I've been there once yeah. for 2 days, and I like was, I gotta go back. I loved it
yeah,
so much.
Yeah, so cool. And then New Zealand, because my partner is Kiwi. And then we came back to Beijing. So yeah, it's been a bit of traveling in the past.
So where'd you get your accent from moving all over the place? Is that from a British education or?
Went to international school.
Oh, there you go.
So, but my mum's British.
Okay.
And then in high school, I remember I started picking up the American accent, which I know is terrible now. But my mum quickly told me off. And then, so I was made to stick to the British accent.
You will speak the Queen's English in this house.
Yeah. And then New Zealand, I actually pick up on accents quite easily.
Mm-hmm.
And so hearing myself in the speaking in this microphone is actually quite weird because I'm trying not to speak with a Kiwi twang.
Well, I'm gonna say from my untrained ear, you sound I assume you're Kiwi. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely more.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, oh my
I
goodness.
Should be speaking like this.
Heavens to Murgatroyd. It's definitely British, but you definitely have a Kiwi flavor, I would say.
Right.
Yeah. Which is so interesting.
Yeah, I just pick up on accents.
Yeah.
Which is a bit annoying. But
a cultural chameleon.
You could say that, yeah. Actually, yeah.
I've known some people who are very much like that. They're very much aware they're doing it. And I don't think they were aware they were doing it in the beginning, but they realized it about themselves.
Right.
And they were like, oh, this is what I do. And,
yeah.
And they realize when they go into a place, they can really pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's actually quite fun. Like, yeah, it's, you know, this whole, obviously, question of identity often comes up, especially mm-hmm. with my background. People are always very interested to know. And then, to be honest with you, I've never really had, like, a straight answer. You know, if you ask me, are you more French? Are you more British? Are you more Chinese? There's no specific answer to that. It really depends on what stage I am in life and who I'm with and the environment I'm in. It's really strange to be saying that, but it's so true. And at one point, it actually bothered me, you know, not being able to really say where home is. Because it's nice to know that you've got a place to go back to, like mm-hmm. you've got your roots there. But actually, given the circumstances, right now I can kind of still say that it's Strasbourg because my dad still lives in Strasbourg. But my mum moved back to England last year. And so for me, you know, home is obviously where the family is. That would be the spontaneous answer. But my mum's not living there anymore. And my dad might move from Strasbourg to Paris, for all I know, or he might decide to go back to Cambodia. And so if that's the case, then I would never actually go back to Strasbourg. So can I even call that home? And that's always been quite, you know, something I've thought of. And it bothered me for a while, but now I'm actually really okay with it. And being able to call different places home, or to be able to say, oh, okay, today I'm French, or tomorrow I'm British, and then the following day I'm like Chinese, or half Chinese, because I'd never be fully Chinese because of the culture. But it's actually quite cool, and I can play on that. And I found myself in situations even pretending to have the French accent, you know, like it was very funny. Like if Jade listens to this podcast, he will laugh, I think, because I actually suffer a bit from social anxiety. And I was in Auckland and I was due to meet his friends and I just became so anxious. I thought, I don't want to meet them. I'm fine without meeting your friends. Very selfish decision. But I also realized it meant a lot to Jay, but I was really suffering with pretty severe anxiety at that point in time. And so I don't know how this idea came to mind, but I decided, well, you know what? I think it's maybe Jay who came up with the idea, but we say, just pretend that you're fully French and you can't speak proper English. Which is great because, you know, if I don't feel like really talking to you, then I can pretend, say, oh, je comprends pas. I mean, sorry, je comprends pas trop. And then I could just opt out of a conversation.
Oh, that's great.
Which is great. And that's when I realized that actually it's a real asset.
I need to learn some good accents just so I can do that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I don't want to meet this person. I just make like I don't speak English somehow.
Yeah, it's exactly.
Really,
yeah.
It's really bad though, being an American. So few of us speak other languages fluently, and we can't really do that. I'm not a really good chameleon. It's awful. You have this wonderful James Bond-like skill that I am really envious of. Jade is who?
Jade. Jade is, he's a Kiwi man who's been in Beijing for 20 years.
Yes.
And then he has a bit of an institution up in Wudaoko. So he started a bar called Lush. So if you've ever studied in Wudaoko, you would probably know what that place is and where it is. And
it's very infamous.
Yes. Oh, is it?
Of course. I mean, even you know, anyone who's listening to this who's not from Beijing, there's Wudaoko is kind of the college section of town. There's colleges all over the city, but Wudaoko is a concentration of a few of the biggest, most important schools, and that's where all the college kids go, especially the foreigners. So if you're a foreign student studying in Beijing, you're most likely at one of the colleges there. So there's a concentration of these bars. And you said he's your partner?
Yes.
So I want to ask you a little bit about this moving around a lot. When you were growing up in France, you said you stayed in France all through your schooling.
Mm-hmm,
and then after school, what was the motivation to go forth out into the world?
Yeah, so I was actually, I was working for a pretty big company during my studies. And so I worked 2 years during my studies. And it was a very corporate environment. And it was great, obviously, like career-wise and stuff. But I just graduated, and then obviously people expect you to just go into a job straight away. I was like, fuck that. Like, I just worked 2 years and studied at the same time. So I just felt the urge to leave France. And the funny thing is, so I moved from Strasbourg to Paris for my higher education, went to business school there. And that's actually the first time I realized that I wasn't fully French.
Ooh.
Because...
Can you unpack that?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. It's just because I was very fortunate. I was always in the international circuit from like primary school to like high school. And my friends were, some were French, but a lot of them were Americans, Brazilians, Germans, Spanish, Polish, all kinds of nationalities. So although I was obviously living in France, I was also in a bubble of my own, being surrounded by friends from different nationalities. My mum being British, my dad being Chinese. So from whether school or at home, I was always surrounded by, I was in an international environment. And it just really hit me when I went to Paris and went to this business school, which is a bit snobbish, let's put it that way. And a lot of Parisians, a lot of like pure, like really, you know, your French person, très français.
Carries the baguette under his arm.
And they were with this very stylish like Paris hairdo just super glamorous.
I remember one of my trips to Paris, I was staying in like the 15th arrondissement or something, and I was walking down the street and I literally saw these guys with bags of baguettes under their arms and like waiting in line at these Lebanese sandwich shops.
Though.
And I'm like, oh my God, this is like a bad movie. Like, I want to yell, don't you people know you're a stereotype? Stop that.
Hey, stereotypes are there for a reason.
That's right.
But no, and you know, lovely people. I did make some friends, but not that many. I was actually really hard for me to fit in. Mm. And that's when I realized, fuck, you know, big part of me is just not French. I speak the language. I have a few cultural references, but a big part of me just isn't French. And so after studying and working my ass off, I was like, you know what? I really want to explore the world and I want to reconnect with new things. And being half Chinese, I kind of felt this urge to go to China just to kind of understand more the Chinese culture, because my dad, within our family, I suppose there was elements of Chinese culture, but it's a very westernized kind of Chinese culture. And I just wanted to, discover the world and understand my roots a bit more. So, and China was a bit of a natural decision.
So you said earlier that your dad might move back to Cambodia. So he's from Cambodia?
So he, so he was born and raised in Cambodia.
But he's ethnically Chinese?
Ethnically Chinese, so
this is interesting to me as well, because you're saying, I'm Chinese, but that didn't square with the he could move back to Cambodia. So,
oh, right. So, yeah, sorry.
Well, but I'm this is something I've heard before from people. Actually, I know a woman, she's Malay-American, but she's here in China to find her roots. It's a very similar kind of journey, which is really interesting to me, because if your family emigrated from one country, why do you go to another to find your roots? It's because your family that immigrated was also a family of immigrants from this other place. It's kind of like a, you're hopscotching. Like, so did you not, is there no cultural identification with Cambodia, or how long was your family there?
Me personally, no. Especially because at home we actually spoke a dialect which is Chao Zhou Hua. My family, like my dad, my aunts, my grandparents, they speak Cambodian. But it's not something we talked about much, Cambodia, because so my dad was actually a political refugee. So my whole family left because of the civil war there. And so it's not something we really talked about much. It was quite taboo because obviously my grandfather would never speak Cambodian. He obviously speaks Cambodian fluently, him himself having been born and raised there. But it was always, he always identified more with the Chinese culture, I guess. And he was obviously angry with Cambodia and leadership and what happened to the country. And so they always pushed the Chinese culture more. So there wasn't this identification with the Cambodian culture. And I've only been once to Phnom Penh.
I've also noticed this, as I alluded to with my friend, I've noticed this with a few people, that there is, even with Chinese people in China, they will identify the Chinese people who live in these other countries as Chinese, as like their own. Like, I remember...
Right, the diaspora.
Exactly. But they will call them Chinese people, even though they're Malay for several generations, or Cambodians, or Vietnamese even. They will actually claim them as Chinese. Oh, there's Chinese there. It's a very interesting...
I guess maybe it's because, I mean, Chinese people are proud to be Chinese.
Yeah.
Like, my grandfather was extremely proud to be Chinese, you know. With my dad, I don't think he struggles with identity so much, because my dad now has the French nationality. And if you ask him, he'll say he's French. But
how American of him.
The ethnicity, but the ethnicity is Chinese. And Cambodia, he just happened to grow up there, and he left when he was 15. Yeah, 15, 16. So
but you just connect right to the Chinese part.
Yeah, definitely.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Have you discovered anything about, like, you came here on the journey, what did you discover?
What did I discover?
Yeah.
That my understanding of Chinese culture growing up in a Chinese family, well, partially Chinese family, has nothing to do with Chinese culture. Yeah. No, at all. Certain values such as family values, like the community, definitely there. But actually my family, like Chinese family in France, they're a lot more French now, I would say, than actually Chinese. Because my dad married a British woman, and then my aunts, everyone's with like French partners, apart from my aunt who married a Cambodian, but all the other aunts and uncles, they're with French people.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're the odd woman out with a Kiwi.
Yes, I am. And my sister with a Spanish.
Oh, really?
From Barcelona.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's awesome. So it's pretty cool, because with my sister, we decided the day we both have kids, then... So they'll be in Barcelona. We're thinking we'd love to live in Wanaka, which is on the South Island of New Zealand, which is super, quite remote. But that's where bungee jumping was
invented.
Oh, wow. And you've got ski resorts, because we're big into snowboarding, the outdoors. It's mountainous area, and there's a gorgeous lake. And so if we ever live there, and my sister lives in Barcelona, then we'll do cultural exchanges with the kids. So my sister's kids would come to New Zealand, they'd learn how to walk without shoes and just be close to nature, connect with nature, do random extreme stuff.
Meet hobbits,
correct. And then our kids would go to Barcelona and learn everything about culture and art and languages and cultural exchange, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Wow.
That's what we're projecting, you see.
That's fantastic. So now you've been on the road for how long since you left France?
Since I left... Are you trying to figure out my age?
No. I'm just trying to get a sense of the journey, that's all.
I have to count. That would be about close to 10 years.
How often do you go back?
I try to go back twice a year, actually.
Twice a year?
Yeah.
Okay. So you still have the connection you said with your dad who's in Strasbourg. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So your goal is to kind of, you see yourself as settling in New Zealand now.
For a while.
Yeah.
It's really a tough one. Actually, that's the difficulty, I think, with multicultural couples, mm-hmm. especially when you're talking about New Zealand, which is at the bottom of the earth, you know, because obviously I want to be close to my family. Mm-hmm. I'd love to live in Europe.
You can't be close to anyone in New Zealand. That's just how it works.
Yeah. Which is also the beauty of New Zealand. Yeah. That's the thing that also makes it so special. Mm-hmm. I would love to be close to my family. And we have spoken about moving to Barcelona because Jade is also would love to just live in Europe. He loves this whole culture thing. And he loves it when I speak like this with a French accent. So he would totally be up for moving to Barcelona. But there's also an attraction to New Zealand because of its remoteness and because we love nature so much and we love being in the outdoors. And New Zealand is such a gem. It really is. And you can find that in Europe too. But it would be weird for me to say, I wouldn't move back to Strasbourg with Jade. I wouldn't move. We could maybe potentially move to Paris. I have friends and family there. But over Paris and Wanaka, I would still choose Wanaka.
Well, I think about, you know, your lifestyle even, or your yep. just kind of pathway that you've followed, which has been moving around a lot of yep. different places. I mean, mostly in Asia and China, but still, you know, you've been kind of on the road,
mm.
you know, and then this idea that you kind of have, I'm going to stop being on the road and I want to sell in one spot.
Right.
You know? That's something it's actually a little unusual. Like the people I've spoken with so far, they don't really think that way. Maybe it's right. a stage of life thing. I don't know.
Oh, but... yeah. Sorry. Yeah. No, I didn't quite answer your question. No, you can okay. edit it out.
I didn't ask it properly. I'm a poor host.
Not at all.
But it was interesting tangent.
No, we wouldn't settle down for like permanently. Mm. It's like for phase of life.
Sure.
Say if we decide to start a family, then we would choose possibly New Zealand at first because we would want our kid to have this connection to nature
mm-hmm.
and being in a culture where it's totally cool to walk bare feet, you know, and to swim in the sea in winter. You know, that's kind of the values, the stuff we want our kid to hopefully, you know, be interested in and actually do. So we'd maybe settle for 4 or 5 years and then move around. And I think just saying that, okay, we're going to settle down in one place, it's just not us. Mm-hmm. I don't think we would. And we both understand through experience that actually you can make plans. You can say, okay, I'm going to settle down in this place, but it's probably not going to happen because life is going to throw shit your way and then things are going to change. So we make plans without making plans. And when it comes to geography, of course, you kind of need to plan a little. But we're also both conscious that it might not happen, actually.
This is one of the things that I'm kind of discovering about myself. And the only reason I'm discovering is because I'm talking with other people now. And it's, you know, a little more investigative because I'm asking questions and probing. You know, expats tend to be people who will plan ahead in terms of travel. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, this year we're going to go to these three places. So we figure out our days off and, you know, our cash flow. And we know we're going to do this. And,
yep.
you know, I know where I'm going to go theoretically for the next, you know, 9 to 12, 14 months. Like mm-hmm. we just kind of know we're going to go to these places mm-hmm. and we've got it kind of mapped out. We'll figure the details later, but yep. this is what we're doing.
Yep.
And I find that's very common with expats, which you kind of have to do because yep. if you're going to travel home in quotation marks, to go back to visit your family, you got to kind of plan that in advance because they're long haul mm-hmm. trips and they're expensive and all this stuff. But at the same time, I'm noticing a lot of people don't think about quote settling down. It's a different concept with us, at least the people I've been speaking with so far. Like I've talked to, you know, one of the guys I'm working with on migration media is this guy Brendan, and he kind of envisions settling down in China and New Zealand. Like he wants to be back and forth,
right?
Like
yeah.
he wants to be back and forth. And you know, with you know, Elisa, my wife, and myself, we don't really have a time frame. And you know, we think about settling down in a vague sense of like maybe we'll have a homestead somewhere. Yep. But even then, we really love this idea of being on the road a lot or maybe yeah. having a couple of places we go to.
Correct. That's our dream.
Yeah.
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 Like, yeah, why settle down in one place when the world's your oyster, really?
And it makes sense if you've been on the road your whole life. you know, settling down just means something different.
Yeah.
Are you going to stay in one spot forever? Why would you do that if you if you understand you have access to this whole world?
Yeah, exactly. Because we're privileged too. Like, just to say, not everyone has the option to think, oh, actually, we could live, be 6 months here and 6 months there, right?
That is, I'll tell you something.
So that's a privilege we have.
That is, I will say, maybe this is even a teaser, but I will say there are plans afoot for us to have a whole series of discussions with people about this idea. Like, what is an expat versus a migrant? You know, like, why are some people labeled expats? Why are we expats and not migrants? It's because we're, you know, upper middle class from the Western world.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're Mexican walking across the border to be a, a seasonal farm worker, you're a migrant.
Yeah. There's really it's labeling.
It's
human construct. It's terminology.
Socioeconomic, racial. Yeah. It's all crap.
Correct.
There's no difference between us and that person.
Correct.
The whole thing with privilege, you're absolutely right. But at the same time, that privilege is becoming more accessible as prices and the hurdles to moving around go down.
Mm-hmm. The
issues are things like laws that prevent people going in. Because as access becomes easier, governments are putting up more barriers to stem that tide because it's flowing more and more.
Yes.
And people like us, we have access to this because we're not seen as a threat, which is tragic, but at the same time, I also see as kind of like subversives. Like someone like with your story, your multicultural, multi-ethnic story, because you come from France, you're not seen as a threat, but you bring in your multiculturalism to wherever you go. So no matter where you, quote, settle down, you know, your sister settling in Spain, that is a French Asian person settling in Spain. That is an invasion, you know what I mean? And I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know? I don't get to do that because I'm just a white guy. Like, no matter where I go, I'm just a white guy. I go to Africa or here, but, you know, I'm just an invader no matter where I go. I'm quite boring. That's one of the reasons.
Hey, as long as you contribute to the society, I think that at the end of the day, that's what's important, right?
Yeah. Sometimes, like, one of the reasons I like doing these interviews is because I get to talk to people with much more interesting stories than mine. Mine's okay, but it's like, you know, my multi-ethnic mix happened generations ago, like 7-8 generations ago.
So if you had to choose, Mike, like having a different nationality or having dual nationality, would you actually still decide to be you, like American white Mike, or would you like to infuse a bit of multiculturalism in there?
It is so amazing you're asking this question. I must be projecting something because I had a conversation this morning with a very good friend of mine who is multinational, multi-ethnic American. And we were talking a little bit about holding a passport, what is nationality, what is an expat, these type of things, how to define it. And the question came up, would you give up your American citizenship? And she was totally open. She says, I'm not ready yet, but it's totally on her radar. You know, she's American. She's culturally American. She identifies as American, but she also recognizes that she is of a different place as well. And she's been living here for a long time, and her family is from here ancestrally. And, you know, she's been working here, speaks the language. And, God, she won't come on the show. I really begged her. But she was very open to the fact of, yeah, I think I'm going to get to a place one day where I very well may give up my citizenship. And she asked me, point blank, do you do it? And I had to say, you know, it's not out of the question. I am more proud to be an American than I know how to express. I mean, when you live outside your home country, that's when you really understand what being of that country means, because you are grow up and you are seeped in that national identity. America is a little more complex. We have several regional identities. So yes, I'm a Bostonian, I'm a New Englander, and I'm an American. And that means a lot to me. And I recognize it in myself, and I'm damn proud of it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I realize that the longer I'm overseas, the more I am seeing passports as really just permits to enter certain places. They're like VIP cards into clubs on the street. You know, my passport gets me into a whole bunch of countries in terms of visa-free access, but it's also limiting in some ways. It means I have extra taxes that I have to worry about paying. It's harder to open bank accounts because of our tax laws. It's, you know, there are places I can't go because they hate Americans. And there are benefits and drawbacks to having that VIP card. Would I want another one later in life? I have to say it's not out of the question.
Wow. You
know? What would that be? I don't know.
Swiss passport.
A Swiss passport. Well, you know, it's funny. As an American, I think Canadian is the easiest to say. Because they're like...
Oh, okay.
Well, they're like our kooky neighbors, you know? They're our kooky neighbors. They live next door. You know, they have really cool parties. And, you know, they have lots of interesting relatives who come over during holidays. And, you know, they invite you over for barbecue sometimes.
They're like the Kiwis of Australia.
Ah, there you go.
That's why we love the Canadians.
I'm sure my Canuck friends will love to hear that. The Kiwis of Australia.
Yeah.
But that's the easiest for an American to say. But I don't know. You know, I value being an American. You know, I can walk into that room over there and pull out all my Boston t-shirts because I'm so hardcore identity about where I'm from. But
you were saying like, oh, like your story's boring. You're just like a white American guy. So you're obviously proud, but you, on the other hand, you also find it boring.
I think it's boring because, you know, my perspective is I'm meeting people who aren't like me. And the American story of migration is one usually of permanence. So people come to America because that's where they want to go. At least that's the story that we're told. That's the narrative, the general narrative. People come to America because America is the promised land and that's where they want to go. Give us your downtrodden and your poor, your wretched, yearning to be free, and come here because that's the destination.
Mm-hmm.
But being out in the world, I meet people where they're not trying to get to America. They're not trying to get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They're just out living in the world.
Yep.
You know, we have access to this whole planet, most of it. And the idea of settling somewhere is almost limiting.
Mm.
You know, that's what I'm discovering during these conversations. Mm. As I have these conversations, I'm learning about myself as I learn about other people because I'm exploring this idea of what it means to be an expat or a migrant.
Mm.
You know,
and interestingly, it's hard actually to answer this question unless you speak to other expats,
mm-hmm.
because obviously your concept of being an expat is just yours, right? But it's not a universal truth necessarily. But by talking to other people, it just widens the whole definition of being an expat, because actually there's no answer, right?
Yeah.
It's very personal.
Every person,
I'm
still kind of new at this, but every person I've spoken to and I've asked that opening question, where is home? Mm-hmm. I get a different answer.
Yeah, correct.
Everybody has a different answer. And I'm really starting to think there is no single answer. There's no category.
No. And it really depends on how you define home. Like every person has a different definition of home. It can be like a geographical region, it could be relatives, it could be other things more spiritual. Like actually where I feel the most at home is when I meditate. Actually, even if I'm in Beijing, if I'm feeling a bit down or I get a bout of anxiety or anything, I don't necessarily imagine myself, oh my god, I want to go home. I'm like, no, I really want to meditate right now. And then I find some form of comfort through just reconnecting with myself at a deeper level, and it feels comforting. Like I suppose home would feel comforting. So
you can be home anywhere then.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
And actually the planet's my home, really. Like the more I kind of look at the world and try to learn more about, you know, nature and just how fucking amazing our planet Earth is, if you zoom out and or if you're an astronaut and you get to travel space and you look at, you know, our blue Earth, it's so beautiful. I mean, it's a miracle. And this is our home. Like, the whole planet is our home. Like, it's Mother Earth. You know, when we say, I don't even know where the term Mother Earth comes from, but there must be this underlying knowledge that the Earth is our mother, you know, the whole Earth is our home.
Yeah. Well, it probably comes from the ancient matriarchal social constructs that would be really great if we could go back to, right?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. One of the motivations I have for this podcast and the whole migration media concept is this idea that the population of people who are living as migrants or expats or whatever is growing so much that the very idea of what is home, what does home mean, where is home, those answers are changing.
Yeah.
If you live in your home context, you never leave your home country or home region, which the vast majority of the population do, that idea of home is very much about a place and the people around you and the culture that you're surrounded by as you grow up, right? But as more and more people move and move around a lot, that definition doesn't hold true. And when that definition stops holding true for more and more people, it starts to challenge the kind of fundamental building blocks of society.
Yeah, it does.
It does. And that can be scary to a lot of people. And I think we're seeing reactions to that. They don't verbalize it in such specific ways, but a lot of the backlash to migration is, you're changing our culture. Well, of course, cultures always change. You know, your culture is different now than it was in the 1950s. You know, it just happens slowly. But when you see these new people moving in or you see people moving out, it's a challenge. It's a challenge that humanity is always facing, but I don't think we've faced it at such a wide scale and at such a fast pace, at least not in our modern history.
Right.
And, you know, it's important to have these conversations. I'm learning so much and I'm realizing that what I thought would be a kind of a simple conversation to have with people and a simple, I thought there'd be a simple answer out there.
You know, there isn't.
No, there isn't. I'm learning.
There's probably as many answers as there are people.
Yeah. And how do we accommodate that as a species? How do we come together? Because we're tribal people. We're a tribal species. How do we come together, you know, under this notion that there is no one answer, there's no one definition?
Yeah.
You know, how do we organize ourselves? I don't know.
Well, I don't think it's, because again, it's actually just the notion of home is also just a mental construct, right? A mental and emotional construct. And at the end of the day, does it really matter? I mean,
well, for some people it does. Quite fiercely it matters.
Yeah, for some people it does. And I think it can be also quite painful, actually, being so fiercely attached to the notion of home. Because actually, I find it now really liberating.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to feel that I need to identify to a place or certain people to have this notion of home. And it's a much more, like, probably philosophical question. And I think spirituality also really has influenced me a lot on the way I see things and how I do actively try to detach myself from things. But now, not having an answer to where is home, for me, is actually so liberating.
Yeah.
Because I could make anywhere my home.
That's interesting you put it that way. It is kind of liberating. It's... You know, to have a cultural identity and to embrace it and to value it, but at the same time not feel tied down by it.
Yeah, correct.
It is quite liberating.
Yeah. It's kind of like having, obviously having an attachment is nice, but not being like bogged down by it or like completely 100% defined by it. Like, because it isn't your true essence anyways. I mean, you happen to be born in the States. I happen to be born in France. But I could have well happened to be born in the UK or in Cambodia. Would that have changed my deeper essence? No. And what, to me at least, what's more important is my deeper essence, not where I come from or what I do, where I am now, or what I'm doing this physical realm, right? It's just my, what I'm trying to explore more is the nature of life and my essence.
I'm interested in kind of how this philosophy or this idea of exploration kind of manifests in people's lives as well. So like, you're in communications, right? Marketing?
Oh, what, like currently?
Well, currently what you're doing now, you know, what is your kind of career path?
Right. So I started in the luxury industry that I'm not very proud of.
Oh.
But it was more like I started in product development, so more like project management. I started out in the luxury industry, so worked for a skincare brand back in France. And then I started working for Swire, which is a pretty prominent group in Asia. So they do many different things. They do aeronautics, so they own a Hong Kong airline.
They're very famous in Beijing for being property developers.
Yes, yeah. So they do a lot in real estate in Beijing. And I was working for the hotel branch, which is really awesome, boutique, kind of very innovative, on the edge hotel brand. And now, so I'm working with my partner, Jade, and he has a restaurant group in Beijing. And so I'm helping him, like, doing everything and anything. Mm. So from a bit of marketing to the main thing I'm doing actually for him is more, I'm leading, so they're a B Corp certified company.
Mm.
Which is, I don't know if you're aware of what B Corp is.
No, please define it.
It's the future of businessman, or it's the way business should be done. It's basically a certification like fair trade is to coffee or commodities, or like the LEED certification is to architecture. So the B Corp certification basically is given to companies who meet certain rigorous standards of, say, environmental protection or taking care of workers. So it's basically any company that operates in a sustainable, ethical way. And so I'm very proud of Jade. So his company, can I give the company's name?
Yes, of course.
The company name is Gung Ho Pizza.
When we see him tonight, I'll ask him for some sponsorship money.
Yeah, sounds good, man.
Gung Ho Pizza is phenomenal. I love him. And this is not an advertisement. He's not paying me money, but it is. One of the reasons I love them is because, well, first of all, I've known some of the guys in there since I've been here, basically. But also, I love the focus on environmentalism.
Yeah.
And especially Jade has been, since he went vegetarian, he's been so open to doing the vegan options.
Correct.
And he's been gung-ho about it, to use a phrase.
Yeah.
But it's been really great, and it's given myself and Elisa and other vegans in the city access to pizza, and it is such good vegan pizza.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah, we're pretty proud of that because, you know, it wasn't an easy sell, especially with, you know, our team.
I will
Chinese.
Just say, I've been trying to sell Gung Ho on this for almost 4 years.
Right, yeah.
It's been hard work, but I'm glad it's been good.
Yeah. No, we're really happy with the results. I mean, one of our main stores downtown, I mean, 30% is vegan.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Pizza, which is just for us, then it's just mind-blowing to think, wow, there's such a strong community. And we were really happy. What we were even more excited about is our meat eater friends who are not remotely interested in veganism, who tried our pizza and was like, wow, it's actually really good. I would have that on the days that I want something lighter.
Mm-hmm.
And because a lot of people know, they'll turn a blind eye, but a lot of people know it's better, obviously, for their health, but more importantly, for the planet. But if we can inspire more people to at least try or to reduce their meat consumption, for us, it's extremely gratifying. And that's why Gung Ho even exists in the first place. And when Jade started the business with John 8 years ago, they knew from the very start that they wanted it to be a responsible company. And the whole idea about pizza, why pizza? One, because it's an easy sell in China because of the culture of sharing around food in China. And everyone loves pizza, right? Yeah. So if you want to influence people and try to inspire them in a positive way, what better way to do it, one, with food, and two, with pizza, which is a really kind of chilled out, laid back kind of food. You know, it's not your fine dining thing, and we would never go into fine dining because we want to be able to touch the masses, basically. And from the day one, it was, how do you use food as a vehicle to bring about positive change? And obviously, it's one, it's a challenging thing to do, but two, it's even more challenging in China, in a place like China, because most of our customers are, at the end of the day, Chinese. And how do you get them to come on board, you know, to endorse a brand that is basically beyond just food, is trying to bring about causes that a lot of Chinese people don't understand.
Like, or is there even a culture in China to get behind causes or associate brands with causes?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough one. Like, we changed out, so we don't have any plastic straws anymore, and we changed it out for metal straws. And as much as foreigners are super excited and really open to the idea, it's like, yeah, that's so freaking awesome. Shout out to the Bulk House, Carrie and Joe, because we carry their product. Yeah. Awesome people. support them. Check them out. Chinese people are like, wow, 这个太奇怪啊，不干净啊，不，为什么没有塑料吸管？ And for them, it's like, wow, this is like dirty. We don't want to use a metal straw. And you're like, and again, it's psychological constructs. Mm-hmm. Like, dude, that is no more disgusting than you eating with chopsticks.
Right.
You know, like reusable chopsticks. We had a few comments at first, like, complaints from Chinese, but actually now most people, they're super happy with it. And we get our straws stolen, so people obviously like the metal straws.
But that's the highest compliment.
Yeah, exactly.
Stealing your stuff.
Yeah. The CFO is not very happy about it, but it's all good. So that's basically Gung Ho. For us, the reason why Jade and me were in the business and why I actually agreed to be part of the business is because of the environmental you know, causes that he's trying to support and trying to bring out. Basically, it's, we know we're part of the problem, especially when we do delivery. You know, we talk about a lot of the pollution now, which is derived from just delivery, you know, food delivery, especially in China, where it's so prominent. And we know we're part of the problem, but how can we be part of the solution? And how can we maybe, hopefully, inspire our industry to be more environmentally friendly in the way they operate?
Mm. But that's great. I'm glad you're doing what you love, and I'm glad that you're kind of on this really path of discovery.
It has its challenges, though, but it's really good, yeah.
Well, I really want to thank you for coming on, because this has been a really illuminating discussion, and I mean that. And you've given me more to think about. You've given me yet another definition of what home is, and another cool story to, you know, share with the world, and just to kind of mull over in my brain and think, just, you know, can we make a movie out of that?
So what's your definition of home, Mike?
Oh my God, you're the first person to turn the tables. Okay.
Actually, you know what? I think at the end of every podcast, you should be answering that question to see how your notion of home evolves.
Okay. If I'm answering the question, where is home? I would say Beijing. I think I define my identity, my cultural identity, my heritage as, maybe this is American, but I'm finding that someone like you, who isn't American, has the same kind of thing you do in your head. But I think Americans do a lot of this, is we really jumble up our nationality, our geographic history, our ethnic ancestry. It all gets muddled together. Mm-hmm. And I find myself being incredibly proud of all of those tendrils, all those facets of who I am. Where do I define home is? Geographically, I would say Beijing. Even culturally, I would say a Beijing expat. But my ancestral home, seven generations in my family, it's been Boston. I'm a seventh generation Boston Irish Catholic. But even that is very reductive, because there's a very complex story that goes way back, which I won't reiterate here because it's in another podcast. But there's a lot that goes into that. And I'm finding that I'm relating to more and more people who aren't American, that have very similar kind of ideas of identity and home. And I thought it was an American thing, but I'm learning it's really a human thing. And I think that the constructs that we've created for our societies that are built around nation states have, that, like you were saying, it's kind of liberating to realize that you can go outside that. And I'm discovering that as I go along. And it's really becoming clear only in the last few months as I've been doing these interviews. Because you're telling your story, and I even think I mentioned it. I think you were talking about your dad, and I was like, he's such a great American. Like, he's basically living the American dream. You know, that's what he did. He had French nationality, and he's a French person. Like, that's what an American does.
Yeah.
But that's, it's much more universal. And yet, we put borders around these experiences and call them French, or we call them British, or we call them American, or we call them Mexican, or whatever. But we're all sharing these same experiences.
Correct.
So how do we break through all that noise? I don't know many people having these conversations, and I'm not saying I'm special. I'm just saying that it's not happening kind of out in the ether. Like, it's not publicly discussed. It's not, it's all beneath the surface. You see movies and TV shows where they kind of talk about it a little bit, but it's all subtext.
Right.
We're not explicitly talking about these issues. I don't know if we're afraid.
Although in France now, they're talking about it a lot, because France with the World Cup.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw the clip of Trevor Noah.
No,
I didn't. He made a comment saying that actually it's Africa that won the World Cup. And then the French ambassador wrote him a letter.
Oh, really?
Like, telling him off, basically reprimanding him, saying, no, they are French.
Yeah.
They're not African, they are French.
And when they come home, they'll go right back to their ghettos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is actually a bullshit answer, because they may be, they're French on paper and part of themselves, maybe identify themselves to being French, but the truth of their ethnicity is they are from African descent.
Yeah.
And you know, you can't deny it. So are they African? Are they French? Why? They're just both.
But my friend who said after two generations she still didn't feel like she was French, you mentioned the whole I'm not French.
Do you know, the World Cup, I did not support the French in the final.
Oh, you, I supported Croatia.
I have absolutely no link to Croatia whatsoever. Wow. And I love the French team. I think they're awesome.
You're especially horrible French women.
And especially also, you know, the discussions around cultural diversity in France. I think the French team is freaking awesome. Mm-hmm. Especially the new, you know, the new protege, Mbappé.
Yeah, Mbappé.
And what he stands for. So I love the French team and I do love France. And I am proud to be French. Partially French.
French as you feel like you want to be today.
But I supported Croatia because I kind of felt they were the underdog. And that just as a... See, I was just supporting people, like mm-hmm. human beings, not so much the nationality in that case, because I thought, you know what, Croatia, and I did actually feel they played better than the French for most part of the game. And I just thought, wow, I want them to win because I want this tiny little country of, what is it, 4 million people to be super proud and to show that as a small country and as a like small team, so to speak, that they can win something as grand as the World Cup. So it wasn't about nationality for me. It was about who deserves it more, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was actually hoping Croatia would win.
Mm. I'm an American, so I didn't give a crap.
Yeah, right.
I'm like,
I don't give a crap either, actually, because now I'm Kiwi and I totally support rugby. Like, football next to rugby is...
Soccer is 90 minutes of turnovers and 2 seconds of
correct,
scoring.
Correct. Like,
you know, that's
no, cool. Although no, the final was a pretty good final. Okay. It was pretty action packed. Yeah.
Maybe I'll watch it on a replay.
Yeah. Rugby's still better though.
All right. Thank you so much, Carrie.
Thank you.
Well, that conversation just blew my mind. Isn't Carrie awesome? I am just loving these conversations and I hope you are too. If you are, drop me a line. Let me know. If you're not, drop me a line. Let me know. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at migrationmedia_. Please remember to subscribe, and if you're listening on iTunes, give us a like and a review. It helps other people find us, and we will see you again next week.